That was remarkable, and you remind me I forgot my cheese head, Governor Doyle. Born in Milwaukee, I should never leave home without that. Although my wife will tell you there's a cheese store here in Beverly Hills where if you put that cheese in your gas tank, it would be more than $150 a barrel oil. But we look forward to your vision coming true. You know, it really is remarkable what you've just heard from these amazing leaders and the fact that they would take the time to come across the country when they have things in their own states going on with budgets, with all the usual things that governors have. So for them to carve out this time to come together, please give them another great big round of applause and thank you. Now, we're not going to leave them up there alone, but governors, before we bring up your other governors and world leaders to talk with you and our moderator, we would like to have a short presentation for you and for the rest of our delegates here of the results of day one. Some very exciting things happened on day one, and so to give you a short synopsis of the progress made and the discussions, let me introduce Secretary Linda Adams of the California Environmental Protection Agency.
Governors, thank you again for being here. I've not had the honor to meet all of you yet, but we're going to have to continue this cheese debate later today. And ladies and gentlemen and distinguished guests from around the world, let me welcome you to day two of the Governor's Global Climate Summit. It was a very exciting day yesterday. We were reminded of the impact that climate change is having on humans, wildlife, our environment, and the economy. Distinguished panelists from states, provinces, non-governmental organizations, the private sector, international organizations, and others discussed approaches and tools for developed and developing countries to work together to reduce global warming pollution. And, of course, President-elect Barack Obama inspired us with his commitment to aggressive action on the part of the United States. I'm confident that our work at this summit is helping to set the stage for continued progress towards an international agreement. It supports the promise of the Bali Roadmap and complements efforts of the Clean Development Mechanism and programs at the state, provincial, and national levels. In the morning, the panelists agreed that it is crucial that we all measure our greenhouse gas emissions as the first step to taking action. In the afternoon, the panelists agreed that there is a promising role for sectoral approaches to complement other policies at the state, provincial, and national levels. Yesterday, we examined how sectoral approaches can support cooperative efforts. Our discussions targeted the highest emitting sectors of the economy, where there are opportunities for us to work together to reduce emissions. For both the energy and transportation sectors, we heard that there are substantial opportunities to reduce emissions, including particular focus on energy efficiency and renewable energy. In the discussion of the cement, iron and steel, and aluminum sectors, we highlighted the need to coordinate our actions globally to achieve our environmental goals while growing our economies. Sectoral emissions intensity standards are one example of how we can collaborate. And we were reminded of the opportunities for sequestering carbon through effective forestry and agriculture programs. Working groups will continue developing tools to use sectoral approaches, including establishing industry standards, protocols for reductions, energy efficiency programs, finance measures, and the like. So in conclusion, I want to thank the speakers, the session chairs, the moderators, and the panelists for their hard work and contributions to this important summit. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce you to Carter Roberts, President and CEO of the World Wildlife Fund. The World Wildlife Fund is working to conserve the world's ecosystems. They combine global reach with a foundation in science, promoting action at every level, from local to global. Ladies and gentlemen, Carter Roberts.
Biologists have known for years that evolution is not an orderly, rational, predictable process. It occurs in these bursts of change that are discontinuous and that are often driven by severe environmental stress. Talk about stress. At WWF, our scientists around the world lie awake at night looking at the changes wrought by changes in climate. Thinning sea ice, polar bears at risk, amphibians disappearing. All the world's major ecosystems are changing in front of our eyes with enormous consequences for people. Fires, flooding, catastrophes. I hate to say this, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. Recent science shows that we are now on a path to follow some of the worst-case scenarios predicted by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. One cannot underscore enough the urgency of the issue that we face. People say we need to save a planet. We need to save ourselves. It is an amazing thing when we have leaders who see this clearly. This conference began with Governor Schwarzenegger, who has brought courage and smarts to set the example of how you can build prosperity by moving to a low-carbon economy, and who, through this conference, has galvanized and encouraged others to do the same. Yesterday, we all had chills running down our spine when President Obama-elect displayed deep conviction and called for an unequivocal support for cap and trade, a willingness to set specific emissions targets, and a conviction to move to a new green energy economy. And over the past couple of days, you, the conference participants, and the governors assembled here from all around the world have showed us that you are moving your states in the right direction, in many cases faster than the nations in which your states exist. You're providing the engine for this larger effort. So we're seeing right now in the world and in this conference one of those moments described by biologists, a burst of evolution in response to a period of extraordinary stress, driven by need to be sure, but also driven by opportunity to create an economy in a world that desperately needs efficiency in how we produce and make things. We saw this week the imperative for differentiated commitments and reductions across an array of sectors: energy, transportation, manufacturing, and last but not least, forests. We need to reduce emissions in all of these sectors or we're going to fail. We saw the need for technical and policy breakthroughs, to build accounting and governance systems, to knit together the world, and to build the basis for the flow of technology and finance to those parts of the world that need it most. We saw the personal conviction of these leaders. Now, our community, when we look at the issue of climate change, the ultimate prize is a global deal. But we know a global deal is going to be built on the commitments that individual nations make at home. And we know it will ultimately be built on the actions that these governors take in their states and provinces around the world to drive change at the ground. So to me, when I reflect on this week, it's been clear how much we need the leadership of these governors. We need your loud and clear voices to push our nation and your nations to make the right kind of commitments in the years ahead and to join a global deal. We need your conviction to drive change on the ground and continue to push for reducing emissions in your key sectors. We need your innovation to drive breakthroughs in accounting, monitoring, governance, technology, and new financial mechanisms. And what you need from us is our help and support. Speaking on behalf of WWF and our staff in 100 countries around the world, we are committed to working with all of you to drive these changes we've talked about. And I imagine I speak on behalf of all the other participants in this room. Last night, we saw another one of those punctuated moments in evolution. we saw something we always dreamed of. Governors in the United States joining governors from the Amazon, governors from Indonesia and elsewhere, to sign an MOU to come together to address the technical, financial, and innovation issues to begin to make progress in reducing one of the biggest sources of emissions, greenhouse gas emissions in the world, which is deforestation. The world is watching. This week sets the stage and the expectation that our global leaders at a local and a national level will come together and solve this problem. An amazing week. None of us are going to leave this week without an increased sense of momentum, that we are moving, even evolving, at a very fast rate. Congratulations to all of you. Even Darwin would be proud.
Thank you, Carter. And now, Governors, one more short set of remarks from reporting from yesterday. Dr. Sabine Miltner of Deutsche Bank, who has some amazing economic information about the benefits of the work that we're all doing together. Please give a warm welcome for Dr. Sabine Miltner.
Thank you very much to the organizers for including Deutsche Bank and for inviting me to share with you some additional observations. Governors, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, climate change is one of the mega trends that we at Deutsche Bank have identified as driving our business. Thank you. We are engaged with our clients in this space as asset managers, as carbon traders, as capital market players. We are providing advice to governments who seek it as they are preparing their institutional setups for carbon markets that we all hope will come once we have agreed on a global deal in Copenhagen. We are also very engaged in the forestry arena and launched a community-based forestry project, and we hope we will put money of investors into play in order to support these communities, as we heard yesterday from the governors of Brazil and Indonesia speak passionately about. In other words, many of the topics that we heard about yesterday at this extraordinary summit are important for our business. And let me congratulate the state of California and its leadership for the trailblazing efforts that they have made in combating climate change. Our head of carbon research recently, in fact, examined AB 32 and concluded that California is even ahead of Europe in its efforts to combat climate change. It has been inspiring yesterday to observe the willingness of states from inside and outside the United States to collaborate on protecting forests, and the networks of cities and states here today and yesterday to share experience and best practice. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, climate change needs to be tackled at the national and at the global levels. And mechanisms need to be found to accomplish the necessary abatement of CO2, of which three-quarters of potential are in the developing world. And one of the topics that actually did not come up yesterday is costs. In fact, some numbers that I have seen put the per annum capital, incremental capital investment in order to ensure the abatement that we need to keep the 2 degrees is in the order of north of 400 billion a year, euros that is, between 2010 and 30. So we know that carbon markets alone will not deliver that, and many of the other conversations that we had yesterday around standards and sectoral approaches will need to play. To be sure, Time to act is now. Despite the unfolding economic crisis that is certainly presenting challenges for the financing of climate-friendly investments. At the same time, governments around the world are considering fiscal stimulus packages in the old Keynesian style. These should be targeted at infrastructure investment that support a low-carbon economy, in particular, energy efficiency in buildings, power grid that can accommodate renewable sources, renewable power itself, and public transport, not only in the U.S., but particularly in the U.S. Such fiscal packages can indeed create jobs. They can create prosperity. California has shown this already. 1.5 million jobs have been created over the last 10 years from energy efficiency measures. The public funds that hopefully will be spent to stimulate the economy, to stimulate a low-carbon economy, should be only seed money for much larger flows of private funding that will be required in order to finance the transformation of our economies. Whether this is in form of public-private partnerships, whether these are risk guarantees or any other instruments. Together, public and private sectors can achieve low-carbon prosperity. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Miltner, and maybe we could encourage Deutsche Bank to come into each of your state's governors and do a similar study, because I think you'll find very similar results about the incredible economic benefits of the work that you're doing. And now, before I bring on our moderator and your fellow panelists for this morning, we would like to hear briefly from Ambassador Richard Kinley of the United Nations, because obviously much of what we're doing here is a mini United Nations. We want to know that what we're doing is valuable as we move forward on the path to Copenhagen, so no one better to tell us that than Ambassador Richard Kinley.
Thank you very much, Terry. Honorable governors, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It's a great honor for me to be here today to speak to you on behalf of the United Nations and its Framework Convention on Climate Change. I was invited to speak on the theme of call to action. One cannot but be impressed by the scope and the scale of the actions to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases that are being undertaken by the states and the provinces and the industries that are present here at this summit. Welcome as all of this is, though, in the face of today's climate change challenge, these actions can only be seen as a beginning. I'm afraid I need to change the theme of my remarks to call for more action. Science tells us that reductions in global emissions of 50% by 2050 are needed, with industrialized countries having to do even more. And by 2020, which is barely 12 years away, the world needs to see emissions in the developed countries as a group reduced by 25 to 40% against 1990 levels, and the growth in developing countries' emissions well below business as usual. These are extraordinarily ambitious targets that will require concerted national actions and unprecedented international cooperation. One has to contemplate nothing less than a transformation of the global economy to a low-carbon development path. Change on this scale to address a complex global problem in a globalized economy can only be achieved if it is built on international agreement. International agreement that encompasses commitments to reduce emissions and to support others in reducing their emissions or in adapting to the impacts of climate change that are already being felt. The good news in terms of international cooperation is that the basis for further action exists. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and its Kyoto Protocol have laid the foundation for an ambitious new international regime, including a nascent international carbon market. But it's now universally accepted that much more needs to be done. The second piece of good news is that governments last year at the Bali Climate Change Conference launched comprehensive negotiations on long-term cooperative action on climate change, with a focus on the arrangements in the period after 2012. These negotiations are approaching their halfway point on the way to conclusion in Copenhagen in December 2009. In less than 10 days, negotiators and ministers will gather in Poznan in Poland to take stock, and we hope to launch an intensive second year of negotiations. The Bali Roadmap provides a rough sketch of the eventual outcome of these negotiations, but that sketch must now be turned into a detailed tableau. The main elements of the outcome are likely to be, first, ambitious emission reduction targets by industrialized countries. Second, actions by developing countries to reduce their emissions and support for them to take even more actions. Thirdly, support mechanisms that deliver financing, technology development and transfer, and capacity building to enable developing countries to find development paths that are, if I may borrow from BP, beyond carbon. A significant scaling up of resources is also needed to help countries adapt to the impacts of climate change, especially the poorest and most vulnerable. Speaking here only 2 weeks after the United States elected a new president, and one day after we heard him speak to the conference, it's difficult not to say something about this situation. That Mr. Obama's election platform included a pledge, which he repeated yesterday, to take an international leadership role, in fact, I think he said a vigorous international leadership role on climate change, has created an expectation and an excitement that will energize the negotiations. Leadership by the United States will be crucial in achieving success in Copenhagen in 2009, and even more crucial to achieving the technological breakthroughs and innovations that must come in its wake. So where in this picture, you may well ask, does action by state and provincial governments fit? Three aspects deserve to be highlighted. First, state and provincial governments control or influence important contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. Early action by these governments, which you've heard much about at the summit, has shown what can be done and that action is possible without bankrupting economies. Second, action at the state level can be, in many countries, an important contributor to the ability of national governments to commit to ambitious targets internationally. Third and finally, state and provincial governments will have key roles to play in implementing international agreements through their policies to climate-proof their societies and as controllers of the levers of emissions. In conclusion, I therefore say to the governors here, congratulations on being climate leaders, but the world needs more of the same if it is to meet the climate change challenge. More in your own states and provinces, more in terms of cooperation and mutual support amongst your governments, and more in terms of encouragement to national governments. A global deal in Copenhagen in 2009 is important. Be advocates for that deal. Despite the difficult negotiations to come, a Copenhagen deal is in our common interest. Thank you.